Today, property signs for the 11th of June 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today we look at the latest new home sales data, talk about creaking high-rise in Melbourne, examine the US inflation numbers, and also consider the implications of ScoMo's latest comments on the border staying shut well into next year. And today's post is brought to you by Ribbon Property Consultants. According to the HIA, new home sales increased by 15.2% in May compared to the previous month. The HIA new home sales report is a leading indicator of future detached housing construction, they said. This increase sees sales in the 2 months since the end of Home Builder 2.9% higher than the same time in 2019. The solid level of sales in April and May indicates ongoing demand for new detached homes, even in the absence of stimulus. A record number of new homes are expected to commence construction in 2021, they say. The low interest rates and confidence in the housing market are continuing to facilitate demand. New South Wales has driven the solid results for the last 2 months, more than any other state. Sales in April and May were 36.9% higher in this state than at the same time in 2019. New South Wales saw the smallest take-up of the Home Builder program, but is demonstrating the strongest demand following the end of the program. And the strength of demand in New South Wales suggests that other states will also begin to demonstrate a solid demand for new homes as the impact of Home Builder fades, they said. Comparing the last 2 months of April and May to the same months in 2019, New South Wales led the pack, up 36.9%. This was followed by Western Australia, up 26%, Queensland, up 4%, South Australia, down 14.2%, and Victoria, down 16.1%. So you can see immediately that there is considerable variation across the states, but of course a lot of it is about the construction of standalone homes. It is not about the apartment market, which continues to struggle pretty much everywhere I look. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you do not need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side, and emotions can run high, and price discovery and price transparency are hard to find. Then there is, of course, the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email on info@ribbonproperty.com.au, and if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can receive a 10% discount offer. Now, residents in Melbourne's tallest towers are being tormented by creaking noises so loud that they're unable to sleep and fear for their safety in a plight made worse by strong winds that lash the city and, of course, the COVID-19 lockdowns as well. In 2019, The Age revealed creaking and banging noises at the Australia 108 and Prima Pearl Towers were so disruptive they had caused mental health problems for residents and forced owners to sell. The problem at Australia 108 are still not resolved, and now more residents have described similar issues in two new towers, multiplexes Melbourne Square in South Bank and the Aurora building on La Trobe Street, developed by Malaysian-based UEM Sunrise and completed in 2019. A resident from Melbourne Square, who asked not to be named because he feared it would affect his tenancy, predicted class actions over what he regards as systemic non-compliance with building codes. To me, it seems like an issue they are well aware of, and now they have failed to remedy it in new builds, the resident said. It's unethical for a developer to release a building to have tenants subjected to noise like this. People need to be mindful of buildings developed by multiplex. After the resident made a formal complaint, Multiplex examined the apartment and said the creaking noises were caused by incorrectly installed screws. However, attempts to fix the problem have been unsuccessful, according to the tenant. They cut the wrong wall and loosened the wrong screws and never came back to remedy the correct wall. Residents of Aurora Tower have recorded noises higher than 60 decibels that continued into the early hours of the morning. Complaints have been lodged, but residents say they've been ignored. One resident, who also declined to be named because she feared speaking out could affect her tenancy, said the noise had been so disruptive she'd had to take time off work. "I tried to move into the front room, but the noise is everywhere," she says. "Once it starts, it doesn't stop." A complaint sent to Aurora's management on May 25th, labelled excessive noise, described creaking so loud it's impossible to sleep. "I've mentioned this in the past and been told the building manager will get back to me with what they can do, but there's still no reply. It's been over a year now. Please, can someone help with this?" Another complaint sent in September reveals a pattern of inaction. "I've complained about this many times now. It's impossible to sleep with the noise that comes from the building in the wind, to the point where I do not want to live there anymore," a resident wrote. That report was closed on the same day with a note, "Your issue has been forwarded to the building manager and he will reply on your issues as soon as possible." Meanwhile, creaking noises have persisted at Australia 108. Screenshots from an internal messaging platform shows people on multiple floors have been affected this week in what residents described as hell, insane, ridiculous and a nightmare. "I actually don't feel safe," one resident said. Another said they didn't feel safe. "I can't focus on my work. My instinct is telling me to get the F out of this building," the resident said. Multiplex asked residents to record the noises and place stickers on walls to mark where the sound was coming from. And the company told residents this week, "We would like to advise that Multiplex are committed to assisting in rectifying these complaints where possible and will be in contact with you directly to review each complaint." Australia 108 resident Ken Willis, who moved into the building a month ago, praised the amenities and interior design but said the creaking noises occurred 40% of the time and were frightening and were replicated across the whole building. "It's really hard to explain," the 38-year-old management consultant said. "It sounds like a giant robot is trying to bend a huge iron bar. It's like if you can imagine all the joints in the building, the cladding all rowing together in one split second, and it's reverberating through the entire room and down into the corridors and where the stairs are, the lift area, everything. I've never heard anything like it." A Multiplex representative said there were no structural problems with Australia 108 or Melbourne Square, adding the noises were caused by extreme wind. "When residents experience noise in non-extreme weather conditions, we will work with the building managers to make an assessment and determine if any minor rectifications are required," the representative said. "This is standard procedure on any new building." Mr. Willis, who's lived in high rises around the world, was unconvinced by this explanation. "For them to say this is normal is just false," he said. "What can be done? Who knows? This is the sort of thing that could end up in fairly complex construction litigation." Mr. Willis said he was a deep sleeper, so the noise had not kept him up at night, but he was concerned about other residents. "There are people who could be in a very dangerous mental health state because of what's happening here." Structural engineers have poured money into investigating the problem, which is linked to defective construction materials and techniques used by major developers around the world. The pressure on the industry was massive after the Age articles and still remains today, said resilience consultant Jordan Bartlett. "It's a smoking gun. This is a real issue." Manufacturing firm Rondo built a test site and subjected it to winds of more than 35 kilometres an hour, similar to those lashing Melbourne on Thursday, which caused creaking noises and loud crack. Through extensive laboratory testing, Rondo determined creaking and banging noises could be linked to incorrect insulation techniques and defects in wall and ceiling design and construction. According to a report published this year, a spokesman for UEM Sunrise, the developer of Aurora, said some residents had expressed concerns about building noise relating to extreme weather in Melbourne. "We want to reassure them that there are no issues regarding the stability or safety of the building," she said. "Aurora Melbourne Central is the tallest building in the CBD, and the complex engineering that supports buildings is in fact designed to sway in such high wind conditions. This is an example of the building performing as it should." Now, over in the US, an American conservative political commentator and media host, Ben Shapiro, has stood out on Thursday as one of the few commentators to defend investment firm BlackRock after a report revealed its investment practices had driven up prices in the housing market in the US. His commentary came in response to a Wall Street Journal report about roughly 200 investment firms buying thousands of homes and sometimes entire neighborhoods around the country before raising prices and capitalizing on home buyers and renters. "The practice has enhanced already skyrocketing inflation in the housing market. I see many people who are enraged at BlackRock," Shapiro noted in a series of messages weighing in on the issue. "BlackRock is buying homes from people willing to sell them. If you don't like what they're doing, target the loose government policy incentivizing this sort of investment. If you're mad at BlackRock and want to artificially prevent them from buying single-family homes, I'd like you to explain to those who currently own the homes why you're taking money out of their pockets. He said critics should blame the Federal Reserve's insane monetary policy for reducing the costs of loans, adding, if BlackRock is willing to take the risk of leveraging up to buy single-family housing at above-market prices, that's their prerogative, so long as they own the downside risk. No bailouts, ever. And conservatives elsewhere took a more populist tone on the issue, including Hillbilly Elegy author J.D. Vance, who suggested progressives should simply ignore the problem. Now, I've had a number of people ask whether there are signs of similar investment entities here in Australia buying up property. And I have to say, so far, haven't seen them. But if you know different, let me know. Now, according to Scott Morrison, the Delta variant could keep Australia's borders closed. He has dashed the hopes of keen travellers once again, warning that there's no finish line when it comes to the virus. Samantha Maiden wrote in news.com.au that Scott Morrison has warned Australians campaigning to reopen his national borders that there's no finish line on the virus, and to consider the example of Britain, where 4,000 daily cases are now being recorded despite the majority of adults being vaccinated. The Prime Minister issued the grim warning as he prepared to fly out of Australia to Singapore, and hopes of an expanding travel bubble to regions that remain comparably safe in terms of the coronavirus, and to attend the G7 talks in the UK. As new variants spark fears of a third wave in London, world leaders are grappling with the reality that the first generation of vaccines are less effective against the new, virulent and more easily transmissible Delta or Indian variant. The Prime Minister said it was time Australians keen to resume international travel knew that they may need to get used to much higher daily case numbers. I mean, and I'll tell you why. I mean, you go to where I'm heading, to the UK, I mean, they have vaccinations in the 70s, and with their older population even higher than that, and they've had 4,000 cases a day, daily. 4,000 cases a day, Morrison said. Speaking on Perth Radio 6PR, the host, Liam Bartlett, then interrupted to note they have borders open to a lot more countries than we do. And the Prime Minister said it was time Australians were keen to resume international travel, know that they may need to get used to much higher daily case numbers. Exactly. So if you're suggesting that we should be aiming for a position where we can have 4,000 cases a day, then no, I don't think Australians would agree with you, he said. I tell you what's real. Vaccination rates in the UK are over 70% and over 4,000 cases a day. Vaccination rates where I'm going in Singapore are over 40% and they're in lockdown. So what we've always learned from this pandemic is there are no absolutes. The virus writes the rules. And last year, of course, Morrison said he didn't want Australia to live under a doona because of the pandemic. I don't wish to see us doing this for any longer than is absolutely possible in terms of having our borders shut, he said. But our borders will remain shut as long as it's in Australia's interests to protect the health of Australians. And Morrison said there was no magical vaccination figure that would allow the borders to open. There's no medical advice that I've received at any point in time which gives a magical number of vaccinations that would enable you to provide that level of assuredness to Australians about what can occur, he said. Morrison's comments come as Australia officially extended the ban on outbound international air travel and cruise ship travel. The emergency period, which has been in place since March the 18th, 2020, will now continue until September the 17th, 2021. However, the federal budget made it clear that international travel is not expected to return to anything approaching normal until mid-2022. The extension approved by the Governor-General means the four existing emergency determinations will be maintained until September, including mandatory pre-departure testing and mask wearing for international flights, restrictions on the entry of cruise vessels within Australian territory, restrictions on outbound international travel for Australians, and restrictions on trade of retail outlets as international airports. And finally, in the US, consumer prices for May accelerated their fastest pace in nearly 13 years as inflation pressures continue to build, according to the Labor Department. The Consumer Price Index, which represents a basket including food, energy, groceries, housing costs and sales across a spectrum of goods, rose 5% from a year earlier. Economists surveyed by Dow Jones had been expecting a gain of 4.7%. The reading represented the biggest CPI gain since the 5.3% increase in August 2008, just before the financial crisis sent the US spiralling into the worst recession since the Great Depression. Although the inflation reading was well above anything seen since 2008-09, the Federal Reserve has been largely dismissive of the numbers. Central bank officials believe the current rise is due to temporary factors that will abate as the year goes on and look higher because of the comparisons to the year ago period, when much of the economic activity remained restricted due to pandemic precautions, so-called base effect. Consequently, market participants generally do not expect to see the Fed react to the latest numbers when the policy-making Federal Open Market Committee meets next week. The strength in the top-line indices was largely driven by categories that have been heavily disrupted by COVID and remain under pressure from supply chain disruptions, wrote Eric Winograd, senior economist at Alliance Bernstein. The more persistent categories of inflation, the ones that do a better job of capturing the sustainable trend, are significantly more subdued. That means that the details of today's print continue to support the idea that the spike in inflation is transitory, even if it's more intense than most forecasters would have originally anticipated. Used cars and trucks prices continue to climb higher, rising 7.3% on the month and 29.7% over the past 12 months. The new vehicles index increased 1.6%, its biggest single monthly gain since October 2009, and was up 3.3% for the 12-month period and the highest move since November 2011. However, the energy index was flat for the month despite the huge run-up in gasoline prices this year, while the food index repeated its April rise of 0.4%. The gasoline index is up 56.2% over the past year, part of an overall 28.5% increase in energy during the period, and food prices have remained comparatively tame, up 2.2% for the 12-month period. A separate gauge that excludes volatile food and energy prices increased 3.8% versus the Dow Jones estimate of 3.5% for the so-called core inflation. That was the fastest pace since May 1992. So we're not out of the woods yet with regards to inflation, but I still believe that most of what we're seeing there is actually transitory in nature. And we'll be watching this closely in the months ahead. But of course, the question is, will central banks start to react? And could they lift interest rates sooner than many expect? Well, there's certainly a possibility of that later. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.